Talk Live. I'm your resident herbalist, Wendy Wilson. Hope you had a great day. We're here to empower you. That's what we like to do here at Herb Talk Live. Thanks for joining us on the American Voice Radio Network, one of the best networks ever to be on. Thank you, Frank. Magical engineer Frank and I got a great show. We are going to be talking about implant mania and what that may mean down the road. It's huge. We're going to talk about it. Also, we're going to be talking about fleas because I'm getting lots of calls lately about fleas for pets. You know, spring we get them and then fall we get the calls because of fleas. So we're going to talk about that. Also, we're going to be talking about blood issues if we get time. And we do have a quack report. And before we get to all that great stuff, thank the Lord that things have calmed down in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah, we had those riots just 25 miles south of us. So we praise the Lord that peace and calm has been somewhat restored. We're going to continue to pray for the peace of the nation. So I want to say a big salute and Semper Fi to our righteous men and women in uniform. I'm lifting them up in prayer, as well as you and I and all of America, praying for righteous leadership. God's hand be on us and guide us and help us, because we need righteous leadership. That's what we need. We don't need confusion. We need righteousness. And so I brought my devotional today. I've heard some feedback from you guys that you like the devotional little segments, so we'll keep going. This is a synopsis from Isaiah 50 and 55, John chapter 19 and Matthew 27, and it goes like this. Come to me and listen. Attune yourself to my voice and receive my richest blessings. Marvel at the wonder of communing with the creator of the universe while sitting in the comfort of your home. Kings who reign on earth tend to make themselves inaccessible. Ordinary people almost never gain an audience with them. Even dignitaries must plow through red tape and protocol in order to speak with royalty. Though I am the king of the universe, and I am totally accessible to you, I am with you wherever you are, and nothing can separate you from my presence. So when I cried out from the cross, it is finished, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. This opened the way for you to meet me face to face. With no need of protocol or priests, I, the King of Kings, am your constant companion. Oof. Isn't that great? That's such a great comforting message. I want you to just to grab onto that and lift it up and thank the Lord for that and seek his face and mind the time because it grows short because that is the way. And without further ado, let's do the quack report. Let's see, magical engineer, Matt, you have a question. Oh, are mites similar to fleas? No, they're not. Well, they're somewhat of a parasitical nature, but they're not the same as fleas. Mites are microscopic. They typically don't feed on live blood. They like dead tissue. Okay, does that make sense? Like dandruff, for dead cells, that's what they like. So different animal. So if you have mites in your bed, that's why they tell you to vacuum your bed and change off the bed pad every once in a while, you know, clean that up and reduce the mites because they're microscopic and there'd be lots of them. Yep. Well, I'm sure fumigating, if you're fumigating for bugs, Frank, not that you are, but typically you'll get those mites as well. If I had to pick an herb, you know, probably some of the essential oils. They don't like eucalyptus. They don't like pennyroyal. They don't like rue. They don't like those essential oils per se. And, you know, this is why the metal frame beds came into fashion, okay, because these bugs would just hide in the crevices between headboards. So that's why they went to metal frame beds. It made it easier to get rid of bed bugs and things like that, little critters. So that's where the metal frame bed came in. Little trivia. All right, moving along. Quack report. Dairy industry, apparently there's some research on something that happened in the market, the milk market, 2004 and 2008, when milk prices soared by about 66 cents per hundred weight. Dairy Farmers of America, Inc., Land O'Lakes, Dairy League Cooperative, Argai Mark, Inc., what they did is they decided, let's supply and demand needs a little tweaking, so they got rid of a bunch of cows so that the price of milk went up, hamburger too. So, you know, when in doubt, when you want to create a glut, you know, they just go ahead and euthanize the 500, 5,000 cows or whatever it is. That's terrible. Terrible. Moving along the quacker, let's see, U.S. Health Agency, this is disturbing. I apologize for anybody that's, you know, a little on edge. But U.S. agency seeks government funding for animal-human hybrids. National Institute of Health, government health agency, recently announced they were waiting for funding from our government to conduct studies that involve mixing human cells with animal embryos. This is just wrong on so many levels. Well, you know, We're going to be coming to a time where they're going to be believers one day when you don't mess with God's copyright. You know what I'm saying? All right, last but not least in the quack report, cell phone radiation study, another one, says it hurts men's ability to be, you know, fertile, you know, be able to conceive. According to a new systemic review, University of Newcastle in Australia, they said they investigated the radio frequency electromagnetic radiation that comes from your smartphones and how it affects male reproductive systems. So what they said is they took some sperm and, you know, they had a sperm count and the mobility of the sperm, the vitality of the sperm, I guess I could check that all under the microscope, and how it, you know, it goes about fertilizing an egg, it's healthy and good. But then when they exposed the sperm to cell phone radiation, there was an 8% reduction in the mobility or movement of the sperm, an 8 to 9% reduction in vitality of the sperm. So, they say also they found evidence of DNA damage. So, goodness gracious, just don't put that in your pocket, guys. Don't do that. You know, watch where you put that cell phone or just don't have one. And that wraps the quack report.
That's all, folks.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it. All righty. We're going to be talking about implant mania. Everybody's, you know, aware of implants. You know, the implant industry in science is pretty much a multi-billion dollar industry. So it entails both the cosmetic surgery industry and the trauma surgery industry. And engineering the human body has been one of science's major accomplishments. So replacement body parts are manufactured out of, you know, titanium and silicone and some other biomedical materials. So within the last 60 years, advancements in this industry called microelectronics and biotechnology have led to wireless devices and monitoring. So the implant industry exploded in 1958 when the pacemaker was heralded as a huge success. And we're told that a lot goes into the development of implant devices. Now, physicians say it takes an engineering mind to help create implant devices. And according to the Internal Neurourology Journal, 10% of Americans have some kind of implant device for the purpose of restoring body function and longevity. However, we are about to embark on a new journey with regards to implants that will feel like you're in some sort of sci-fi movie. So we're going to take a look at this emerging industry and how it will impact generations to come. Well, we want to look first at some of the plastic and metal implants that the industry is currently using. One of the most popular areas of implant surgery, obviously, is cosmetic, which, you know, has been restricted to patients who can afford cosmetic surgery. There's this segment of this industry that's involved surgeons who would defraud insurance companies to provide service to more patients. For instance, a nose job could become sinus surgery on the insurance claim form. So the list of body implants have been multiplying. So here is a general list. Breast implants, dental implants, ear cochlear implants, hip and knee implants, face implants, you know, chin, cheek, nose implants, pacemakers, drug implants, stents, contraception implants, and drug implants. So there are risks when we deal with this area of medicine, and most people are aware of the health risks, especially associated with the breast implants. So if an implant ruptures, there's serious complications of infection and possibly a disease. So when an implant becomes infected after surgery, the body has an immediate reaction. The localized tissue becomes infected with microorganisms, and the skin swells and becomes red, maybe even hot to the touch. So an implant can become infected even years after surgery. And we're not just talking about breast implants here. So this is known as a latent blood-borne bacterial infection if it's years later, which means the bacteria colonized at the implant site, and then it migrated to other areas. So depending on the type of bacteria, medicine may be able to clear the infection with antibiotics. And science has also infused antibiotics into the implant materials itself to try to cut down on infection complications. But some patients are allergic. They have allergic reactions to these materials. So if the infection becomes embedded within scar tissue, it's harder for the antibiotics to clear the infection. So the immune system may also attack any foreign material that's implanted, so drugs may be necessary to suppress the immune system. Well, let's talk about this emerging area. It reminds me of Dr. Frankenstein. The other area transplants have expanded into is what is projected to be a very successful industry involving human enhancement devices. So these are devices that are purposely implanted to improve natural limitations of the human body. So artificial means using technology are being used to offer people the option to select characteristics that are not just cosmetic. So these biotechnology implants enhance the human's natural capabilities by altering what is possible beyond human range. So there is this growing trend that if you don't want to be left behind and you want to remain competitive, you may need to alter your physical body. So this is not simply treating a physical illness or a disability. This is offering people the ability to express and enhance themselves in what I call a sci-fi or bionic way. So these areas of scientific medicine, it's more than human genetic engineering. It is the merging of the following fields of science. It's the merging of nanotechnology, biotechnology, information technology, and cognitive science. So altering your body to enhance a function goes beyond the tattoos and the long hair and the other generational trends that made people stand out in order to find themselves. You remember that? you know, and your parents just didn't like the way you dressed, and it's just the way you were expressing yourself. Well, it's going to get a whole lot more advanced than that. Yeah, the bell bottoms and the hip huggers, you know, and the long hair, that's tame compared to what's going on. All right, so this emerging technology is wanting to pretty much accessorize the human body. Science has promoted a way for humans to accessorize their function. For instance, gene therapy and stem cell therapies is just the tip of the iceberg. But then they have neurotechnology, which is neural implants, which is a brain interface computer chip. It's pretty much cyberware, biochemistry, electronic devices is what they are, that they implant in the brain. And then they have nanomedicine, which are nanobots that they inject to the body to perform certain tasks. They also have 3D bioprinting, which is artificially constructing living tissue. And they have what is called an exocortex, which is an artificial external information processing system that augments with the human brain at high-level processing. So it's like melding a computer with a human brain. And then they have the mind uploading transfer, or uploading or copying a human conscious mind and transferring it to an artificial intelligence. Right? You can't make this stuff up. This is insane, but okay. Then lastly, the artificial nutrition. This was interesting. It's called radioisotope generators to resynthesize or recycle glucose, amino acids, and vitamins inside your body so you'll able to live for weeks without food. Yeah, a gone is the dining experience, apparently, in the future. I guess they don't have to worry about dying and dash, really. All right, so we're going to talk about ethics, because apparently in this area of science, ethics are outdated. The scientific community kind of split on the ethics issue about the emerging field of science that will enhance the human condition as if to make it better than what God created. So the Bionic Man TV series of the 70s is an example where this field is headed and beyond. So there are young adults who are willing to volunteer to have their limbs and eyes replaced with technology if it will offer them some sort of superhuman capability. So the Institute of Ethics and Emerging Technologies advocates the field of human enhancement, where the Council on Bioethics does not. So the Council on Bioethics criticizes that human enhancement is really transhumanism, and it also offers the right for humans to modify their own minds and bodies. So the transhumanism, it kind of goes a step further and allows parents to make human enhancement decisions for their children, which will affect them for the rest of their lives. And this is obviously a very controversial topic, and many critics feel that it's an area prime for abuse, recklessness, and selfish short-term perspective that is ignorant of long-term consequences on individuals and society. Let me read you this quote by Dale Carrico, PhD, University of California at Berkeley, of the Institute of Ethics and Emerging Technologies. And he says, "Physical or mental advantages or enhancements will create an unfair advantage to those who can and will use them. It will eventually produce an unequal access, creating a gulf of the haves and the haves not." End of quote. And then, let's see, author Ray Kurzweil, he's also an inventor and a computer scientist, he says this: "Within a century, humans may be required to merge with technology in order to compete in the marketplace." End of quote. Scary, scary, scary. You got to, like, become a cyborg? Really? Well, let's talk about these changes. If they're going to let this happen, push the ethics aside, if this is going to happen, it's going to take off. Let's look at the changes in the human enhancement world for a minute. So if we ponder the what ifs of the human enhancement world for just a moment, we realize the depth of impact this field would have. So the areas it would impact are wide sweeping. For instance, sports, you know, would enhanced humans be able to compete with unenhanced humans? Because there will be a clear disadvantage, very obvious there. How about economics? Would human enhancement extend life expectancy where pensions and Social Security would need to be making some serious adjustments because people wouldn't be retiring at 65? Probably wouldn't even retire at 75. Then if people are living longer, there may be a greater strain on resources if the population rate remains the same. And then employee marketability, you know, enhanced humans will be faster, more efficient, more knowledgeable than the non-enhanced. So, I mean, people are worried about robots taking their jobs, right? What about, you know, enhanced humans? And then privacy. Would enhanced humans have the capabilities to spy? Think about it, you know? With just a twitch of their eyeball, could they hack somebody? I'm wondering. Also, enhanced versus non-enhanced, would widen the socioeconomic gap that we already have. And there's also the psychological impact of an identity crisis, because human enhancements will impact an individual's identity via his or her self-conception. This could threaten to alter the fundamental self, creating an inauthentic person. So an enhanced person may also have relationship difficulties, as others may no longer be able to relate to that new enhanced person. Let me read you this quote from Jeffrey Miller, psychologist, University of New Mexico. He says this: the Chinese have a eugenics program, and they aim to increase the IQ of each subsequent generation by 5 to 10 points. Within a few generations, it would be game over for Western global competitiveness, end of quote. Well, that's if they're successful. Obviously, I mean, we may be snickering a little bit and making fun of this a little bit, but you have to understand, in the scientific community, this is serious business. I'm talking cha-ching. The impact of this industry is serious business. The implant industry is going to be serious, and smaller and smaller technological parts are created every few months, making human enhancements very likely, very natural looking. You may not even notice somebody's got bionics. So I once knew a man who had a knee replacement, and his wife was complaining that the surgery site was very warm to the touch. This was 6 months post-op, mind you, and the man was a farmer. He wore these overalls, and those overalls are pretty thick, you know. Farmer overalls are hardy. And so he wore these overalls, and I touched his knee, and it felt like he had an electric blanket under there. Hot! And so his doctor and his therapist could not remedy this issue. So he asked me what I would do. And I said that, well, there seems to be residues from the surgical process trapped in there. They remain, and the body's reacting to it. It's an irritation. I said I would use the skin poultice and dry out the remaining impurities through the skin. And so he said he'd try that. You know, it's easy. You know, you don't have to take anything by mouth. You just put it on top, on the knee. So his wife informed me about a week later that the knee wasn't hot any longer after he used the poultice and he felt better. Yay for God's herbs. Well, you know, there are risks of infection. We got to remember, you know, I can understand someone needing an implant for mobility or to restore normal function. The human enhancement area, though, I believe is going to create a superhuman race and designer babies we haven't even dared consider. So it all offers the risk of infection and the body rejecting implants. Personally, I'm going to keep my original equipment. I'm going to protect it using my herbs to remove toxins and impurities, and I'm going to boost my immune system. So if you'd like to learn how you can do that, you want to call the experts in organ cleansing and immune boosting, and that would be Apothecary Herbs. Their number is toll-free at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com. is the web address, thepowerherbs.com. If you're outside the U.S., dial 704-885-0277. And, you know, if you're serious about herbs, you need Apothecary Herbs. They have a free catalog they can send you, and, of course, money-saving coupons are on their website. Definitely give them a call. And be empowered, right? I like that kind of power. I'll take a break. Be right back.
I've been swimming around between the lines of red and blue. I was coloring thoughts for the sake of finding truth. I was following rules, counting all of my good deeds. I was living in fear, hell at my feet. Heaven is out of reach, and there's a fire that I won't slay. There's a fire, but no fire brigade.
Pumping life into the original medicine. Herbalist Wendy Wilson will be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
I don't trust anyone wearing a mask. Robbers, cattle rustlers, or doctors. I listen to Herb Talk Live.
The ancient Greeks thought thyme herb provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes the nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for thyme tincture and tea to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Herb Talk Live has your HMO, herb medicine options, coming up next.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Wendy Wilson, thanks for joining us here on American Voice Radio. And moving into our second segment, we're going to be talking about fleas because we're going to be getting cold here really quickly, fall moving in. I saw by the newscast the other night that we're going to chill off midweek here. So starting tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we're going to go down into the mid to low 70s during the day. So a good time to wash and wax the suburban, get it ready when you got that cooler weather. But it also means that, you know, little friends are going to be jumping on your pets and coming indoors. So I thought we'd kind of once again go over some natural solutions to your flea problem without having to risk your pet's health to all those chemicals. So there are reports that fleas are pretty much are exploding in some areas of the United States, and even in Europe. A lot of people complain when they travel to Europe they have flea problems there. Areas in the United States that typically have flea problems are the southeastern states, San Diego, California, and also parts of Connecticut and Pennsylvania also have problems. Dr. Michael Dryden, he's a professor of veterinarian cytology. He says Kansas City State University, he's there. He says he's known as Dr. Flea. That's his nickname. He says that vets doubt the efficiency of the flea treatments because they're not working like they used to 15 years ago. And also Dr. Christine Kane, professor of dermatology at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine, said that flea outbreaks can occur on pets being treated for fleas. So we're told as, you know, warm weather, rainy days set in the spring and then things start cooling off in the fall, we see a flea problem. Now, fleas multiply quickly and health experts in major cities are concerned about a outbreak of possible bubonic plague. The rock squirrel flea is the primary vector of plague in Colorado. So that song Ring Around the Rosie was known as a nursery rhyme, but it has a history of going back to the 1700s and may have originated during the Black Plague, because depending on the plague bacteria, the skin can have a red discolored rosy look to it. Now, worldwide, there are more than 1,800 different species of fleas. And according to buginfo.com, the largest species of flea prefers mountain beavers, and they're a third of an inch long. That's a big flea. I'm glad that parasite likes mountain beavers instead of domesticated ones, you know, domesticated pets. So if you live in Colorado, you're aware that the state houses about 80 different types of flea species than any other state in the union. And Colorado also has a flea that likes to bite humans. And even though they are found on wild animals, they can jump onto humans and bite them too. So when the wild animals abandon dens, fleas scatter and can find domesticated pets. So, you know, if you're outside with your pets. Now, fleas can affect cats terribly. Just, you know, totally decimate them by sucking them dry of blood, and they get, leukemia, basically. They just don't have any blood. So cat fleas can multiply on both dogs and cats. And the states that are most common for flea problems are Texas, California, and Florida. So let's look at what we can do about fleas. But understanding fleas and how they, you know, cycle is important too. Because the life of a flea is brief, but it's busy. So the average flea can live from a few weeks to several months. They emerge from their cocoon within 1 second, and then they inhabit its host and are feeding in 3 seconds. So female fleas lay about 2,000 eggs during their lifespan, or that's 50 eggs per day. So the incubation time can be just a few days, 2 weeks, depending on the conditions. So in ideal conditions, a pair of fleas can produce 2 trillion fleas in just 9 months. Gosh. So the flea eggs can fall off animals into your carpets, your bedding, cracks between floorboards, and after it emerges, it can jump to find its host. Now, in the larval stage, the immature flea eats the feces of the adult fleas, the dried blood, for about 18 days. Now, fleas can jump between 8 to 34 inches high. That's about 150 times their size, or equivalent to a human jumping over 1,000 feet. So fleas can also jump horizontally, an average of about 13 inches. Now, some people wonder how fleas can navigate through all the hair and fur on pets. Well, they have 3 pairs of legs, and they have hair-like bristles on them to help them maneuver aside from using the back legs for jumping. So fleas like to, of course, as you know, feast on animal blood. They can suck up to 15 times their body weight in blood each day. Okay, so females especially need a steady diet of blood to support their egg-laying capabilities. But fleas can survive several months without a blood supply if necessary, and they are pretty hardy. They're a pretty hardy parasite and can survive even some freezing conditions. All right, so let's look at pets. So when we see the cute little puppy or a kitten in the pet store window, we don't even think about fleas. We don't think about the financial commitment of owning a pet. And the American Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals says the low ball price range for pet owners that they're going to spend on a, let's say, 15-year lifespan for their pet is between $9,400 and $14,000. So the larger dogs cost more, obviously, because they're prone to ligament injuries, and then they require surgery. And Americans spend about $48 billion on pet food every year, and that is from Pet Products Association that gave me those figures. So the recession also, when it hits, you know, the pet sector, when it hit in 2009 and 2010, pet owners cut their pet expenses by about 16%. And pharmaceutical pet supplies now can be, you know, very expensive. Veterinarian care is about 4% over inflation. So the pharmaceutical flea and tick prevention products aren't any cheaper. They're expensive and they're toxic. So on average, depending on the size of your pet, The drugs can range for flea and tick prevention from $39 to $80 on top of the vet visit. And most pet owners search for a lot of these products online to save money, and they buy them overseas at about a 30% savings. Now, according to Natural Resources Defense Council, the chemicals used in the pet flea products are alarmingly toxic to pets and humans. So think about that the next time your kid is hugging the family pet. So the chemicals are known as tetrahydrobiphosphonates and provoxifer, and young children should not be exposed to these chemicals. However, these chemicals are often used in flea and tick pet collars, sprays, and powders to treat flea problems. And pets can lick the chemical right off of the collar, so you got to remember that. Now, the chemicals are really a nerve toxin that affects not only your pet, it affects humans' nervous systems too, but it's supposed to kill the nervous system of the parasite and it dies. So if pets get too much of these chemicals, it can cause nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, wheezing, sweating, and watery eyes. Now, if the pet becomes poisoned by the chemicals, the symptoms to watch for are muscle twitching, drooling, seizures, and death. And according to the Humane Society of the United States, hundreds of pet owners report pet deaths from flea and tick chemicals in pet products and medications every year. Studies report that long-term exposure to these chemicals in small doses can produce a cancer risk for pets. According to the state of California, Proxapyr is classified as a human carcinogen. It's in the flea and tick collars. So if you or your pet are exposed to these chemicals and it's classified as an organophosphate family chemical, it can offer significant risk to neurodevelopment problems, which include hyperactivity, learning disabilities, attention deficit disorder, and impulsive behaviors in humans. And that's from the Journal of Pediatrics, June 2012 journal. Now, in 2009, the Natural Resources Defense Council published research on the pet flea tick chemicals, and they found that within a three-day exposure to the chemical agents in just the flea collars, that it exceeded the EPA's acceptable dose level for toddlers. So the EPA estimated that young children spend 2 hours a day with their pets, and it does not include sleeping with their pets. And parents and pet owners need to decide what the acceptable risks are associated with these type of flea and tick products. Well, we're going to get to solutions. Don't worry. Okay, so the animals that are unfortunate hosts for the fleas have usually health conditions. Serious infestations of fleas produce anemia. And puppies and kittens would be at a higher risk of anemia than other infections like tapeworms. So if animals eat the fleas, they can get tapeworms. Other signs that pets exhibit from flea problems are hair loss, scabs, chewed skin, and hot spots, which are serious lesions on the skin, indicating an infection. All right, so let's look at some natural solutions. Fleas are an ancient problem. Our ancestors would use natural plants to repel these pests. Washing clothes and bedding with garlic and thyme help repel these parasites. Essential oils were also used, such as tea tree oil, citronella, rosemary, peppermint, and eucalyptus. Some pet owners will feed their pet brewer's yeast or garlic to penetrate the blood supply and make the blood less appealing to the fleas and ticks so they leave. And what one pet owner told me that she sprinkles garlic powder, not salt, but powder on her pet, and it cuts down on the flea bites. And another person said diatomaceous earth that applied to fur also has helped. Now, vacuuming the home helps, but a used vacuum that doesn't really use bags and you just store the fleas in the closet with the vacuum and they can escape, so they just reinfest your home. I if you can use like a, we'll throw the bag away or get a rainbow vacuum that uses water and it forces all the debris, including these fleas, into the water and drowns them. So when you're finished, you just flush them away in the toilet. All right, so what about outside? Well, when you're treating outside the home, you want to remember what you want to protect flea predators when you treat outside. You want to protect those predators that actually eat fleas, like ladybugs and dirt worms. Okay, so don't be killing them. Now, some other sources. If you're worried about your pet acquiring anemia from blood-sucking fleas, then you might want to super fortify them with some plant nutrition. The folks at the Apothecary Herbs have Power Greens for Pets. It's a powdered mix you add to dog food or cat food. And it also improves digestion, and it's grain-free, gluten-free. So it covers the minerals, amino acids, plant protein, and vitamins. Now, some of the essential oils that I mentioned, you'll find them in the flea and tick collars that are all natural as well. And it's infused in the plastic collar itself. And your pet smells fresh. It's non-irritating to the pet. It's non-irritating to humans. And it helps repel the fleas and ticks. Also, I like to layer in other advantages like the essential oil shampoo, and that's available too at thepowerherbs.com. And just makes your pet smell fresh, and it keeps their fur soft and supple, and they're not itchy and scratching. So do keep that in mind. If you're looking for the pet products, you can go to thepowerherbs.com and click on the pets section and check it out there. And, get stocked up with your flea and tick collars. They last about 3 months. If your pet gets wet, you may have to replace them sooner. So if you got a pet that likes to swim in lakes or streams, you'll have to replace it probably within 2 months. And this way, you won't be exposing your pet or your family members to carcinogenic flea and tick chemicals, and you'll be washing your pet and doing the natural thing and repelling those fleas anyway. Brewer's yeast is great, so check that out. You can add it to the pet food as well. That works, I know, and it just makes their blood taste different, and the fleas and ticks don't like it, and they jump off. So easy fix, non-toxic, not expensive, and your pet won't be at risk, and neither will your family. So go to thepowerherbs.com and click on the pet area. If you don't have internet, just give them a call and get a catalog, because there's a whole section on pet stuff. 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. All right. We have a few minutes, and I don't have enough time, really, to do this topic justice. But we shall forge on. And we're going to be talking about this thing about artificial blood that the scientific medicine is coming up with. Because people aren't donating as much blood anymore, so they're coming up with artificial blood. So they're tinkering with this, and they've been doing it a while. You know, they've been trying to create artificial everything since the 1600s, to be honest. 33% of Americans require a blood transfusion. They may have a choice real quick here between real and artificial blood. We're told the artificial blood is necessary because of insufficient blood supplies. So we have 4.5 million Americans that in 1 year could need blood. And what is the difference between natural human blood and the blood that's manufactured, artificial stuff? Well, according to U.S. National Library of Medicine and the National Institutes of Health, the artificial blood doesn't fulfill the same functions as natural blood. Here's their statement that was in the Journal of Critical Care, July 2008. It says, while true blood serves many different functions, artificial blood is designed for the sole purpose of transporting oxygen and carbon dioxide throughout the body. So, blood is the healing life source of the body. So, if it's not transporting nutrition and taking away toxicity, It's not fulfilling its main job other than the oxygen and carbon dioxide. So apparently there are different ways that they're manufacturing artificial blood. Some of it is made from petrochemicals, and they make a synthetic blood. And so what they do is they isolate chemicals, and they use recombatant biochemical technology, and they splice in some DNA. It's bacterial DNA into the blood to create it. It doesn't sound healthy, I know. Artificial blood made for humans for blood transfusion, they take it from stem cells from, let's say, umbilical cords or from an adult donor. They also can manipulate that in the lab to create an artificial blood source. And we're told then it's able to deliver oxygen and carry away carbon dioxide, but the rest of it. All right, so here's a quote from Dr. Sunan Sarkar, Department of Anesthesiology, IMS, Banaras, Hindu University, Uttar Pradesh, India. Okay, so Dr. Sarkar says, artificial blood can be produced in different ways using synthetic production, chemical isolation, or recombinant biochemical technology. So synthetic hemoglobin-based products are produced from hemoglobin harvested, get this, from E. coli bacteria strains, end of quote. Aha. Well, I mean, how would you like to be laying there and that they're saying we're going to give you a blood transfusion of, you know, E. coli bacteria? Oh, yeah. It doesn't sound safe. No, it doesn't. And you might be asking yourself, why in the world would they, other than, you know, maybe there's not enough blood donors, why in the world? Well, in 2012, the average cost of real blood transfusion was $18,000, or about $180 to $600 per pint hospital cost, depending on the location of the hospital. So Europe is embracing the artificial blood. BioPure estimates the cost of their artificial blood to be about $1,000 per pint. And it's really not clear if the cost is hospital or patient cost at that point. But if it is patient cost, the hospital will pay about $100 per pint for the artificial blood and charge the patient $900. So there, we're told that one pint of artificial blood is equal to two or three pints of the one pint of artificial blood is equal to two or three pints of natural blood. So Dr. Pierre Lafoy reports from Brown Biomed that the cost of the artificial blood will come down eventually when the manufacturing process becomes more refined, and patients with artificial blood will also have to be monitored more closely at first, requiring more tests, and driving up, of course, some medical costs. And medical science estimates that artificial blood products will net their industry a minimum of $7.6 billion U.S. sales alone, compared to $75 million profit using natural blood. So it makes dollars and cents, then, to manufacture artificial blood, doesn't it? You see why there's a push for artificial blood now? They'll make more money with it. Never mind the risks to the patient and the patient's paying higher fees and having to be monitored and the health risks associated with it, because they did some studies and, of course, it didn't turn out so well. Some people had problems. And, you know, right, Frank, why would you believe them anyway? I know. Hey, you want an easy way to build a blood system? You drink beet juice. You need blood, that's what happens. It's an old herbalist thing, a therapy. For instance, mothers that give birth and they bleed too much, we make them drink beet juice, and they rebuild their blood system in 24 hours. Yeah, they don't need a transfusion. I also know a lady who her doctor recommended she have blood transfusion because she was experiencing kidney failure, and she was just this side of dialysis, and so she didn't want to do that. She worried about infections and everything else that goes along with, you know, transfusion. So, well, for me, I do the beet juice thing. Just take some raw beets, juice them, drink, and drink as much as you can, as much as a gallon if you can, in a day or two. Then she goes back to her doctor, blood work's done. The doctor assumed she had a blood transfusion. Her husband said, no, she didn't have one. He goes, yes, she did, because your blood numbers look really great. And she goes, no, I didn't. And he said, well, I don't understand. She goes, well, I drank beet juice. I mean, it was a Linda Blair moment with the head spinning around. The doctor just does not compute. Well, God's herbs are here for the service of man, and he can't lie. So remember that the next time you're told to use something really crazy like artificial blood or a human enhancement surgery technique, right? The bionic humanoid coming near you. I know, it's nonsense. It's just nonsense. It really is. I'm out of time. The information presented is not intended to diagnose, treat, prevent, or cure a disease, to seek medical advice, to dare from a licensed medical physician, or using any product or therapy. I'm your herbalist, Wendy Wilson. Until next time, be well.